Will Cincinnati City Council approve a major development on Hyde Park Square? The Cincinnati Planning Commission recommended approval, but many residents and nearby businesses are opposed. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the development, the opposition, and next steps are Strauss Troy shareholder Matthew Fellerhoff, who represents the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council opposing the plan. Thanks for being here, Matt.
I'm happy to be here.
And Suter LLC partner, Sean Suter, who represents the developers. Welcome back, Sean.
Thank you, Lucy. Always a pleasure.
Sean, start out explaining what your clients want to develop on Hyde Park Square.
Well, they want to develop housing on Hyde Park Square in a mixed-use setting. So this is what we would call a walkable urban infill development, a multi-story housing development over retail and commercial space, and along with a hotel, a boutique hotel property, probably around 80, 90 rooms, somewhere in there. This would replace right now a one-story building, the only one-story building on the square. The Coldwell Banker is the tenant, and currently that's the old Kroger store that's been there for decades. This would replace that and also infill some of the parking lots behind the buildings on the square and really complement the existing housing and the existing retail and restaurants on the square, along with providing parking, much needed parking in structures behind the square.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about that. Why do your clients argue this development is needed? You mentioned parking is needed, but why do they say, hey, this is really what Hyde Park Square needs?
Well, I think there are a couple big things going on here. There's some macro issues. One of the bigger issues that I think deserves some attention is housing in the city and the push for new housing and infill housing opportunities and really leveraging our walkable neighborhood business districts, which are really the lifeblood of the city of Cincinnati and are identified in Plan Cincinnati as our centers of activity that we should be focusing development in. And so this really follows the planning that the city's been doing for the last 10, 15 years and, you know, is the type of development that will leverage the incredible assets that are often underutilized. We're seeing this around the city from Madisonville, College Hill, other business districts where those walkable urban environments are being leveraged for new housing. And so we think this is the perfect opportunity. I invite everyone to take a look at an aerial photo of Hyde Park Square. Take a look on Google Earth, go online. You will see that about 50% of the land area of the square block between Observatory, Erie, Michigan, and Edwards is surface parking lots. It is vacant surface parking. Most of those are owned privately. They're not public. So they don't actually provide public parking. And it's not the best use of land in a neighborhood that is so desirable and so walkable and so full of life. Our idea is let's fill in some of that open space, some of that surface parking that's underutilized, and use it for much needed housing and an amenity like a hotel.
Hmm. Matt, a lot of Hyde Park residents and business owners oppose this plan. Tell us why.
Well, the reason for the opposition, frankly, is that it's too big and it's out of character with the Hyde Park Square. Hyde Park Square is a valued Cincinnati asset. I don't think I have to make that call. The developer, and congratulations to the developer, has assembled a large part of Hyde Park Square. There will be a development there. There will be a development there. And what we want to see, what the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council and the thousands of other voters who are opposed to this want to see is the right kind of development. What's happened is that this developer presented this plan, attempted to talk to my client, or went through the motions of talking to my client, but didn't take any of my client's suggestions, and went to the administration with their lobbyists and got approval for a maximal plan. This is a plan that the language of the zoning code, and the zoning code is part of the city plan. The language of the zoning code requires, it limits 50 feet as the height of buildings in Hyde Park Square. And there's a reason for that. That's there to help protect Hyde Park Square. The 50-foot limit is going to be blown away. The administration has recommended giving away the farm here to give this developer really a height subsidy. This is some of the most valuable property in the east side. The developer is going to make money with is going to develop it and going to make money with less height or with more height. But there's no justification. So just quickly to back up a little, 20 years ago, you're going to hear this, I'm sure. There's a building that's commonly called the Lululemon building. That went up to much consternation in Hyde Park because it was too big. It was too big. Hyde Park, the neighborhood council, and many residents got involved. The height went down to 50 feet because of that. In the zoning code, they did not want this to happen again. They did not want to see the Lululemon store be repeated. There have been four developments since then. They have all complied with the 50-foot limitation with certain variances, but under the zoning code. And now this developer has come in and asked for an exception that these other developers didn't need to develop in Hyde Park Square to create a much larger development that is out of character with Hyde Park Square. What my clients want is to stay within the new standard. The developer keeps pointing to the Lululemon store building as its justification for building. That's backwards. That's pointing to a non-conforming structure as a justification for why it complies with the zoning code. There has not been enough analysis of the economics of this as to why this subsidy is needed. The developer says the subsidy is needed to justify building this parking garage, but the developer's last proposal took away over 90 spots, and the developer also says that to build the parking garage, they're going to ask for TIF dollars. So that money that's needed to justify building the parking garage isn't necessary because they want the public to pay for that, another subsidy. The what we want and what we're asking for is that city council to do the right thing and make the developer come back with a proposal which is not the maximum. I guess I don't blame the developer for wanting everything because they make a lot of money, okay? But the city council needs to support the community and come back, make the developer come back with a plan that's consistent with actual zoning, just like all the other developers in Hyde Park Square.
And so when you say it's out of character, is that primarily because of the height? Are there other factors that you're talking about other than the height of these buildings?
This is a complex zoning issue. There's something also called the Urban Design Overlay District, which controls some of those other aspects. But what's happening here is that the developer, through this action, asking for a PD, is seeking to do an end around the Urban Design Overlay District standards, which should control requests related to massing and scale of buildings. And they're trying to get city council, through a zone change, to go around the requirements of the UDOD procedure. So yes, that's where this issue and why this issue is so important, because of the size.
We're talking about a major development plan for Hyde Park Square. What do you think of the plan? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Sean, I want to get your thoughts on that. Why not stop at that 50 feet that Matt was just talking about? What do your clients say about why that much mass is needed for this?
That's a great question, and there's a lot to unpack there in what Matt just said. First, the current zoning in Hyde Park Square as a CN, a commercial neighborhood P with a B overlay, it does require us to go through the Urban Design Overlay District process, which Planning Commission will review later on if we are able to get City Council's vote and get the rezoning of the property to a PUD. So this is still a very conceptual plan, and that's the way that the process is designed. First, you start with a concept plan. We don't know every particular yet. We're talking about uses. We're talking about general massing, form, scale, that kind of stuff, building location. The real details come into play when we get into the urban design overlay district and the final development plan approval, which will happen at a later time. So that'll give the public a lot more opportunities to have input into this design of this building. Why not go to 50 feet? Well, first of all, 50 feet is a not realistic number. It is not a height that has actually historically been built in over time for housing in Hyde Park Square. If you look at the Allais building, it's over 60 feet. If you look at Michigan Terrace, which was built about 20 years ago, was controversial, but was the building that actually Matt's client, the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council, in discussions pointed to and said, if you can keep it within this range of height, we would support it. Now, that was later walked back, but there were a lot of moving goalposts, I think, and a lot of discussions that were had, and I think it was hard for us to come to any kind of agreement because there was such movement on the position of the neighborhood and various players. But Michigan Terrace is over 80 feet high. And the real key to the height is step back. So there are ways to design a building to allow it to appear to be in line with some of the other buildings, more like the 50 feet that Matt's describing, or even 60 feet like the Allais building, and still get that additional floor or two above that by stepping the building back. That's done throughout the country in some of the best shopping districts and streets around the country. That is very common. You will look at the building from the street and not even know it's 80 feet. So there are ways to do that. I think my client is a Cincinnati-centric local developer who is interested in making, they know this is a once-in-a-generation development. This is a real opportunity. And they want to make it something really extra special. Under the current zoning, they could do a box full of apartments at 50 feet. And at 50 feet, they could fill it. There's no density maximum in the zoning code. Here, they're actually talking about doing terraced upper floors with outdoor amenities, perhaps a hotel that's not currently allowed by the zoning, which doesn't make a lot of sense in a walkable urban neighborhood not to allow hotels. So that's another reason we need the PUD and to allow for us to have the type of parking that we need. We could actually make a lot more money, do a lot more units with the box full of apartments. But my client is not interested in that. They want to leave a legacy here in Hyde Park Square.
We do have some callers on the line. Hi, Brian. Thanks for your call. What's your question?
Well, hi, Lucy. This is Brian Frank. I'm running for mayor of Cincinnati. I strongly oppose this development, and my primary concern are the students and the parents of the students that are going to school right across the street from this oversized development, and the fact that they're going to be removing the barrier parking that's been in place for years that slows down the street speeds of the cars that are, and it's going to be two lanes in each direction now. That's going to be very dangerous to the students. So my concern is, what is this developer going to do to protect the safety of our children? That's my question. Thank you. I'll take the answer offline.
Thanks, Brian. Sean, what about that? There have been traffic concerns raised. Parents of children at Hyde Park School have said they're worried about that parking buffer, so to speak, being removed as part of this plan. What do you think about that?
Well, the Hyde Park School drop-off pickup issues are issues with or without our development. There are issues that are ongoing. My client has actually proposed to the city, proposed to the neighborhood, some solutions or some things that could assist with that issue, one of which would be raised crosswalks, flashing lights. Other would be to actually open up some of those parking spaces to allow for more coordinated pickup and drop-off that my client would actually subsidize doing so. So there are a lot of options to address any issues. We don't believe, based on our traffic study or the studies that we've done, that our development's going to have any adverse impact on traffic or on pedestrian safety in that location. That school's been there a long time. I don't think that the location of a school in a neighborhood should be a reason to oppose new housing. It should be an amenity for the neighborhood, and I don't think it precludes anything from ever happening across the street because there's a school there. There's ways to mitigate any potential impacts of additional cars.
Did you want to add anything quickly, Matt?
I'll go quickly because I know time is an issue, but this is a yin and yang thing because in trying to provide safety for students, and my client is very much concerned about this issue, the developer is requiring or suggesting a loss of additional parking spaces. I know Sean said that they're adding parking. They're not adding parking. We've done the analysis. There's going to be a deficit of 179 parking spaces. The parking that they're providing is because of the impact that their maximal development has on the need for parking. If they had a much smaller development, the concerns, of course, because of the impact of the development on safety would be lessened.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll hear from crafters about where they plan to source their sewing without Joanne Fabric. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about a major makeover proposed for Hyde Park Square. My guests are Strauss Troy shareholder Matthew Fellerhoff, who represents the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council opposing the plan, and Suter LLC partner Sean Suter, who represents the developers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have some callers on the line. Let's hear from Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks so much for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I live on a little street called East Side, and I want to point out, I've lived there for 50 years now. Streets like East Side, West Side, Michigan, and Edwards, south of the square, you need to include our streets in the parking situation in any study you do. My street, there are 18 homes. 6 of them do not have driveways. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the impact of Hyde Park Square as it is now and the businesses around the corner, people picking up their kids from the school.
Yeah. I'm going to stop you there, Stephanie, because we are running short on time, and I want to let Sean respond to that. Can you respond to that, Sean?
That's why we're providing parking. We're building a parking garage, some of which would be underground, to allow for, but not only park the additional residents. There are currently 40 apartments on Hyde Park Square that have no parking. And we're going to be solving that problem. We'll be providing parking for them. We're providing public parking where there is currently none. If you go to Hyde Park Square now, you can park on the street. You can park in one public parking lot, I believe it is, behind Arthur's. That's about it. There's really no public parking in there, and folks have been calling for parking garages, something to go in that block of Hyde Park Square for decades, and it's consistently been opposed, or they hadn't had the property rights to do it. We now have the assemblage of property to be able to allow us to build parking that's going to help Hyde Park.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie. We appreciate that. Matt, did you want to add anything to that?
Just quickly, I already made my comment about the deficit of parking, and there would be more parking if a smaller building was built consistent with the zoning code.
Okay. We also have Jeannie on the line. Hey, Jeannie, thanks so much for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hi. There's a natural water source in the parking lot that was referenced by the developer that floods when there's a bad rain. That's why it has not been developed before. The developer has frequently referenced an old Kroger building that hasn't been on Hyde Park Square since 1972, and the space has not been vacant since Kroger left. And in terms of housing, there has been no concrete unit numbers or the number of bedrooms in those units, as far as I know. And what my question actually is, what is the expected rental cost on those apartments?
Okay. Sean, do you have an answer for that?
Well, those are all details that we will come up with as we develop the plan. And I think that is the difficulty of this process is we have to come up with a PUD zoning, a concept, And the community wants us as many details and certainty as possible. And the process really doesn't allow for that at this point. Right now it says, oh, yes, you can build, you can propose a concept of apartments, generally this many, maybe it's 120, 150, whatever the number is, generally retail space on the first floor, commercial space. The buildings are generally going to go here. There's going to be parking here. Those are the kind of issues that are in play and being discussed now at the concept plan stage. We don't know at this point all the exact particulars. That'll come. Those will come during the final development plan phase.
Okay. We do. Thanks so much for that call, Jeannie. We do have some other callers on the line and some emails. I don't think we'll be able to get to everybody, unfortunately, because we are running short of time. But I wonder, have either of you heard when City Council will be voting on this, when the next kind of action on this is going to be?
Sean, I think it's going to be in a couple of weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's moved around a little bit, but I believe it's going to be the 22nd. Is that what you've heard?
That sounds right. I'm not looking at my calendar right now.
Fair enough. I didn't mean to throw a pop quiz at you. we had talked a little bit about this Planning Commission meeting where a lot of people were there expressing their feelings. We got an email that we won't be able to read that noted that several Planning Commission members were absent the day of the meeting. There was a quorum. It was a 3-1 vote. Were either of you surprised that so many Planning Commission members were not there that day?
I was a bit surprised. I frankly have talked to at least one Planning Commission member who wasn't there. I understand why they weren't there. It would have been better if we had the full board there to make our case. But right now we're in the situation where we have to make our case to the elected representatives who ultimately make this decision. And it's a question of whether they want to go with the great swell of public opinion or follow the developers' lobbyists.
So, Matt, what have your clients been doing to make their objections known? City Council is going to be voting on this next. Well, what's their game plan been?
They are attempting to talk to the council people, and they're asking everybody else in the community to talk to council. There's been great satisfaction in the city. We have 15 neighborhood organizations supporting my client's position. Part of that is because there is a feeling that council and the administration does not listen to the neighborhood organizations. That comes out of the Connected Communities experience, and this is just part and parcel. As part of this, we were told in Connected Communities that the zoning would stay and that would protect the local business districts. The first proposal that comes through, the administration recommends throwing out the regular zoning. This is really disheartening. A lot of people and a lot of voters are wondering if they are being listened to.
Sean, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there has been so much opportunity in this instance for engagement with the residents of the community. My client has done over 100 hours of engagement with the community. That's why we have neighborhood councils. That's why we have Hyde Park Neighborhood Council, and they're performing their function, right? There's a lot of opportunity to hear from the neighborhood. I would argue that the neighborhood probably is in a better position to be heard by City Council than the private developer party. Oftentimes it's the small developer who doesn't get heard. Maybe the big out-of-town developers or larger companies get a lot of time, airtime at City Hall, but the small developers like my client don't necessarily get that kind of airtime. And we have the right to talk to our council members just like anybody else in Hyde Park. And we're talking about $150 million investment. That's a big deal. To put $150 million in a development in Cincinnati doesn't happen often, and it's a big deal. So, we have done everything we believe that we can to engage with the neighborhood. We would like to continue to, and we will continue to engage with the neighborhood. But it's now up to really the elected officials to say, do we want to follow Plan Cincinnati? Do we want to focus our development efforts, solve our housing problem or help solve our housing problem by focusing on our centers of activity and leveraging our neighborhood business districts? And Hyde Park is not exempt from that. Hyde Park should be part of that. And it's up to the city council at this point whether they want to support that. But we believe that they will.
We're going to try to get one more caller on the air. Hi, Lawrence. Thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
All right, my question is very simple. Is this heading to litigation, and why does the developer and the city administration feel like they should not be listening to the residents? And I'll take the answer off here. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. I'll let you handle that. Matt, could this head to court?
Well, we've already explained that we think there are significant legal problems with the process, and it could very well go to court because they're ignoring the requirements of the Urban Design Overlay District. But, you know, we are waiting to see what council does. Nobody wants to run into court until council. We are hopeful the council will listen to the citizens and this time listen to the neighborhood councils. That's what we're hopeful for.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Strauss Troy shareholder Matthew Fellerhoff and Suter LLC partner Sean Suter. Thank you both so much for your time today and for your expertise.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, we'll talk with crafters about where they plan to source their sewing without Joann Fabric. This is Cincinnati Edition.